This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. My name is Patsy Gill. You know, in some ways, it's easier to be a writer today than it was 100 years ago. We have all the software that magically corrects our spelling, and we have programs that compile our pages into ebooks. But at the same time, we have to be more than writers. We have to be business people. We have to learn to build a writer's platform. Everything from a web page to Twitter accounts to building a network of fans. One of the best planks in a platform is a book tour. We are lucky that here in Tampa Bay, on April 11th, we have the Beach Babes Book Blast. There will be 60 writers ready to answer your questions and eager to tell you about their books. Whether you have completed a book or are just starting out, this is your chance to learn what it means to get out there and to sell books. But Book Blast is not just for writers, it's also for readers. Meet the authors, and as if that wasn't enough and exciting enough, they are bringing their cover models. Now, I don't know about you, but I always thought they were just, unavailable for tours. But these models are coming with their authors, and they're beautiful people and gorgeous, and I'm sure that everyone will enjoy getting a selfie with them. So do attend this event. It's going to take place at the Holiday Inn at West Shore on April 11th. You can get tickets on Eventbrite. But I have two tickets for the first person to call in and answer this question. What was the name of Lord Peter Wimsey's mother? So call Joy on Paper at 727-441-3000. It sounds like the kind of event that F. Scott Fitzgerald would have enjoyed, and I'm sure that you will enjoy it as much as he would. Now, that reminds me that my guest today shares the same birth date as F. Scott Fitzgerald. My guest today is Leslie Carroll. Leslie, are you there? Perhaps
I am here. Oh, hi, Patsy.
Hi, great. Perhaps, Leslie, you are better known as Juliet Gray, the author of a trilogy about the life of Marie Antoinette. Your books are amazing, and I know they've been described as some of the finest historical writing ever. So I'm really thrilled that you're on today. Perhaps you could tell our listeners why that little bit of Mozart was so important to the subject of your books.
Well, I don't know how many people know that Marie Antoinette, which is a French name, she started out as an Austrian archduchess, and her mother was Empress Maria Theresa, the very formidable Habsburg Empress of the Austrian Empire. And in 1762, Maria Theresa invited Wolfgang Mozart and his older sister, Nannerl, to give a concert for the Austrian royal court. And Wolfgang was all of 6 years old at the time, Wolfie. And little Marie Antoinette, little Archduchess Maria Antonia, who was the 15th of the Empress's 16 children, was all of 7 years old. And little Mozart gave his concert, his sister gave the concert, and as little Wolfie was walking across the long, polished corridor to make his bow before the Empress after his concert, the floor was very highly polished, and this poor little six-year-old boy, after his great triumph, he slipped and he fell on the polished floor, and everybody started laughing at him. And he grew all red in the face. And poor Marie Antoinette, Maria Antonia, her heart just went out to him. And she thought, oh, this poor little embarrassed boy. And she ran out over into the middle of the floor. and she reached out her hand and she helped him up to his feet, and she was the only one that ran out to help him. And she gave him a little kiss on the cheek, and he said, "You're so kind. I'd like to marry you when I grow up." And she said, "Whatever for?" And he said, "Out of gratitude." And that was the first time that Marie Antonia and Mozart met. And it's just one of these incredible stories of two people that would eventually become very famous meeting.
It is a beautiful story, and I was very touched by the way you decided to start the series and by using first person. You really stepped into her shoes.
That's what I do in my historical fiction. My background is as a professional actress. So my training is to become a character. And for me, it's always felt more comfortable to get inside that character's head and their thoughts and their voices and their soul, especially from a fictional perspective, to tell the story in the first person. It becomes, for me, I think it feels more immediate for the readers rather than for a reader to feel like they're on the outside of a story looking in, as though they've gone to a museum and they're looking at a portrait or they're looking at a diorama of an event. Like, I used to go to the Natural History Museum here in New York as a kid, and you'd look at all the little figures and you'd look at the fake trees and the fake buildings. I never want my readers to be on the outside of the glass looking in. I want to bring them into the room with my characters and inside my characters' thoughts.
Well, you certainly
do
that.
Every character I write, whether it's my leading character, Marie Antoinette, or her husband, Louis Auguste of France, the Dauphin, who of course becomes King Louis XVI, or even the supporting characters, her mother, who's threatened to steal the show, or Madame du Barry, who also threatened to walk away with the first book because she was kind of so strong and so exciting. Every character I write, I try to get inside their head and play that character. So scenes for me in the book unspool in front of my head as though they're scenes on a stage or scenes in a film, and I imagine myself as each one of the characters talking to the other one.
Well, they do actually read like a film script. It's amazing how you bring all of the characters to life. When you were writing it, did you think of some contemporary similarities, you know, that people face today, celebrities? Princess Diane comes to mind, the bad press, the mean girls. What happened to little Marie when she arrived in France?
Well, okay, we have two questions here. First, the contemporary similarities. As I was writing, because the books were a trilogy, and of course, as Marie Antoinette stayed in France and became the queen, and there was all sorts of bad press about her and eventually the revolution, there were a lot of things that were happening in America at the time that I was writing the books, because I started writing them they came out in 2011, 12, and 13, but I started writing them a couple of years earlier. And I was inspired to write the trilogy because I also write historical nonfiction about the lives of royalty under my own name, Leslie Carroll, and I have a whole 5 series of books about the loves and lives of royalty. And I had written about their marriage in a book titled Notorious Royal Marriages under my own name, Leslie Carroll. As you said, the Marie Antoinette books are written under my pen name, Juliette Gray. But I realized how much bad press there was about Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI, and how much we learn about that, how much we got that was bad. And I wanted to tell their story, their real story. But as I was writing it, so much was happening in America, as I wrote all 3 books, with Barack Obama's second election and the things I was reading on the internet, the nastiest sort of things that were going on in Congress, that were so similar to events of the French Revolution, with the way that the revolutionaries in some ways paralleled what was going on with fringe elements in the Tea Party, that I was going, wow, you know, history is doomed to repeat itself if you don't learn from it. So there were parallels that I did not put in the book. It's just history that's repeating itself, and bad girls and mean girls. When Marie Antoinette came to marry Louis Auguste, he was still the Dauphin, which is the French word for the heir to the throne. He was 15 and she was 14. So she was coming into the French court, which was, I imagine, my niece was, you know, 14 when she started high school. It was like coming into a hive of mean girls. It was like coming into a high school of mean girls, and the French court, most of them at the time, were very much against this marriage of this Austrian outsider, because the Austrians and the French had been enemies for 950 years before there was a treaty between their two countries. So even some of Louis's relatives were against this marriage, and they were backbiting, and they were mean, and they were horrible, and they were not ready to embrace this little 14-year-old girl who was in way above her head. So it was very difficult for her to try to make her way and try to make friends and try to figure out who her real friends were, which in a way is similar to Princess Diana. But I wanted my readers to find parallels if they wanted to. I really didn't have an interest in saying, hey, this is just like Princess Diana, or hey, when the third book came out, this is just like what's happening in Congress with the Tea Party, or all this mean stuff about the president on the internet is just like what the people were saying about Marie Antoinette, and it's not true, because my story was about the people that lived back then and was very heavily based on the historical record. And as I said, history is doomed to repeat itself if you don't learn from it. So the parallels are there because history repeated itself, not because I wrote about contemporary current events, but because this is what really happened 250 years ago.
It must have been exciting when you went to Versailles after you did all this research and really felt like you were in her shoes.
It did. Part of my research was to learn how to do a very specific way of walking that all of the women of the French nobility in the highest echelon had to learn. And it was called the Versailles glide. One thing that poor little Marie Antoinette, when her mother got word that the French were willing to have her marry the heir to their throne, that only triggered a great makeover, a great physical makeover for Marie Antoinette, because they decided not only was she not pretty enough to become the future Queen of France, but she wasn't smart enough, because the Empress Maria Theresa decided that her daughters really didn't need to have much book smarts because they weren't going to need it. Well, that wasn't good enough for France. So Marie Antoinette had to learn not only French history and French genealogy and to speak the French language very well, but she had to learn all of the manners and customs of the court of Versailles, which were very specific and arcane and had been created by Louis XIV. And she had to learn all the dances, and she had to learn this walk called the Versailles glide, which now you can look at it, because you can Google George Balanchine's Nutcracker and look for the dance of the angels at the top of the second act, and it looks like they're gliding on roller skates. It's a walk where you have to kind of bend your knees slightly and go up on tiptoe and slide across the floor and look like you're a sailing ship, but you have to not bounce. You really have to look like you're gliding across the floor. And Marie Antoinette, because she was going to be the highest lady in the land, had to do this better than anybody else. And she had a dancing master come and instruct her how to do this. So my husband and I were at Versailles, and I said, honey, I'm going to do the Versailles glide. So there we are with miles and miles of marble and parquet floors, and I'm there doing the Versailles glide, and I'm wearing, not jeans, but I'm, you know, wearing slacks, which, of course, I wouldn't have been wearing. But I've since demonstrated this for the Canada's History Channel on a show about Marie Antoinette, where I was in the full dress with the wig and everything, and showed how you lifted up the skirts to show how your feet have to look. And I was taught this by a period dance instructor that I've worked with before, who had a copy, a facsimile copy, of the books that were written by Marie Antoinette's dance instructor. So that's how deep I go into my research.
That it sounds like so much fun. You know, writers are often told, you know, write about what you know, but I love writing about something I don't know and doing that kind of research. So you
well,
spent
this becomes what you know.
Exactly, exactly. And so you took, what, 2 or 3 years of research on this?
It took me, it was ultimately over the 3 books, and because I had started my research on the royal marriage for the nonfiction, the chapter in the nonfiction book, Notorious Royal Marriages, it was overall about 5 years of research. And every bit of it was fun. I'm a history geek. I'm a nerd about that stuff. And I love it. And I am passionate about being faithful to the historical record and then writing an author's note at the back of the book of any place where I deviated from the historical record for fictional purposes and why I did that. But I've written other historical fiction under the pen name Amanda Elliott. For instance, I wrote a book about Lord Nelson and his famous mistress, Lady Emma Hamilton. And I would never, for instance, you know, have Lord Nelson survive the Battle of Trafalgar. I'm not interested in really playing fast and loose with history. I'm not interested in writing some alternate version of it.
Well,
I think that many people actually, many readers get their history from historical fiction because it makes it vivid and come alive for them. And what I learned, especially from my research on Marie Antoinette and her husband, was that so many textbooks have it wrong. There's so much propaganda.
She didn't say let them eat cake.
She never said let them eat cake. And every time I read in a newspaper that some politician says that, oh, so-and-so is having their let them eat cake moment, or comparing some first lady or head of state to Marie Antoinette, and it's like, oh, God, here we go again. And if I had a nickel, if somebody attributes that line to Marie Antoinette, I could, you know, have a penthouse on Park Avenue. I keep wanting to write letters to the editor every time I see that, going, no, 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 we please put this to rest. In fact, Marie Antoinette was raised by her mother to give alms to the poor. She was very charitable, and while the Bourbon court in France, into which she married, was in fact very exclusive and didn't venture outside their palaces. And it's true, they had no idea how the people outside lived. Marie Antoinette herself was raised to have a heart and have a conscience. And there are scenes, certainly in the first novel in the trilogy where she's younger, before she becomes queen, where she's still the Dauphine of France, and she's, you know, queen in waiting. She's married to the heir to the throne, where there are some incidents where she and her husband, and these are based on the historical record, there were some tragedies in France that happened right after their wedding.
Leslie, one moment. We're sure. Just going to take a quick break, and we'll come back. I want to hear more about this, okay?
Sure.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
You could have lunch with the king.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
You could have lunch with the queen. Or you could have lunch with the Chamber. Every Monday at noon, join your host Alex Petro for an insider's look at local business. The latest news, who's who in local business, plus special guests who offer a unique perspective on what matters most, local business. Lunch with the Chamber, Mondays from noon until 1, here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Arg, matey. When it's time for lunch, when it's time for dinner, when the show's over, when the day's over, when it's time to chill, where do we go? Over to Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub. It's literally in our backyard, right in back of the WTAN studios at 700 Eldridge Street, just north of downtown Clearwater. Just look for the broadcast tower. Nancy's food and atmosphere get rave reviews. The laid-back patio is a great place to hang out, dine, and listen to live music at night. And Nancy's one of the friendliest proprietors in town. And now, Nancy is serving Sunday Jazz Brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Brunch served with Eggs Benedict, crepes, waffles, lox and bagels, shrimp, oysters, and a build-your-own omelet. That's all at Naughty Nancy's Food Shack and Crow's Nest Pub, 700 Eldridge Street in Clearwater. That's right where Eldridge crosses the Pinellas Trail between Myrtle and Fort Harrison. Call 446-3717. 446-3717. You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Once upon a time when turkey legs fell from the sky and mermaids and pirates washed in with the tide. That time is now at the Bay Area Renaissance Festival.
Watch as these burly men put their strength to the test for the Florida State Highland Heavy Games. See Highland dancers or participate in the IAF Florida State Arm Wrestling Championships. Discount coupons available at Subway. Discount tickets available at Walgreens, Circle K, and BayAreaRenFest.com.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and we're back with my guest, Leslie Carroll. Leslie, we were talking about Marie Antoinette and her husband. They've always had a bad rap, as far as I'm concerned. One, I think she was... She loved him, although it wasn't perhaps a romantic love.
Yeah, it wasn't a sexual. Yeah, it wasn't a romantic sexual love. Neither one of them were sexual creatures, and he was one of the few French kings never to have a mistress. They had a little issue in the bedroom for many years. The marriage wasn't consummated for 7 years after the marriage, which was one of the problems that gave rise to, ultimately, the revolution, actually, because what happened was he had, I don't know how much you can talk about on talk radio, he had an issue down there with, he had a condition called phimosis, which probably would have been cured if he'd had a circumcision, which was one thing that they recommended and he ultimately had. But, of course, he wasn't Jewish and they didn't have circumcisions back then for non-Jews. So, but it made it very painful for him to have intercourse. And so every time he began to have romantic stirrings for her, let's put it that way, it would feel very painful to him. And that happened all the time because actually he was a very good little husband and went to visit his wife. He knew his romantic duty. He visited her often, every night. So he knew he had to make a baby. She knew they had to make a baby. And in fact, only a male could inherit the French throne because they had something in place called Salic law. The problem was that every time he tried, it hurt too much, so he gave up. And in my novel, I use their bedroom time together to have them converse instead because the French court was saying, I don't understand, they became friends, and it's so unusual. They really became kind of best friends, and how did that happen? Because they really didn't seem to spend much time together during the day. So being a novelist, I used the novelist's imagination prerogative to say, well, something must have happened during those hours they spent in bed together. They talked. They shared. They were teens. They had to do something while they were supposed to be making a baby but couldn't and weren't. And so they talked about their childhoods and losing their fathers when they were young and what that felt like. But the problem was that because there was no baby, the two of them, and there were no psychiatrists back then to help them, and Louis did not want to undergo the medical procedure for a long time because he was worried about what would happen. They poured their passion elsewhere. Marie Antoinette discovered she loved dancing. She loved parties. She loved masquerades. She loved shopping.
Oh, wow.
And Louis had always been fascinated by locksmithing and masonry. And he would have, his older brother had died very young when the same disease that carried off his parents. I believe it was a measles epidemic. So he was never meant to be king. He was the younger brother. And so he was much more interested in mechanical type things and in history. And
actually, his works, the clocks that he made, which are in the Louvre, are quite amazing.
Yes, and he made cabinets for his wife, too, and presented her with these beautiful wooden inlaid cabinets as gifts. So each one of them had completely separate lives during the day, and Louis was early to bed, early to rise, and Marie Antoinette was a nighttime person, and they really had different interests and different pursuits. And so this lack of a child, and all she wanted to do, the most she wanted to do, was be a mother. She had tremendous maternal instincts, but this wasn't happening for her. And the French court, being what it was, with everyone taking lovers all the time, especially when they were married, they didn't understand why. I mean, Marie Antoinette must be getting satisfied elsewhere. She must have a lover. So this began this rise, which actually started at court. There were nobility who lived at court who had their own little private printing presses. It wasn't, in fact, the bourgeoisie or the peasants, who were largely illiterate, who began the slow revolutionary fervor, but it was the nobility that were gossiping and backbiting. Oh, she must have a lover. Oh, something must be going on. They accused her of sleeping with her own brother-in-law, Louis's youngest brother, the Comte d'Artois, because they were really good friends, and the Comte d'Artois was kind of a good-time guy himself. He loved dancing, and he loved late-night parties, and he loved sneaking out to Paris just to go to masquerade parties and go to the opera balls.
So they helped bring themselves down without even realizing.
In a way, yes. And if there had been a baby early on, if this operation had taken place on Louis's nether anatomy early on, if they hadn't waited 7 years, there might not have been a revolution, because Marie Antoinette's time would have been occupied as a mother. She was reading the works of Rousseau, who the philosopher at the time was advocating more hands-on maternity. And so even the noble women of France and England were not farming their children out to nannies at the time. It was becoming extremely chic to raise your own children and be much more aware of taking care of them and being more hands-on. Marie Antoinette would have loved nothing more than to be in the nursery herself with her kids and watch them grow. But she didn't have her first child until December of 1778, and it was a girl. So as far as the court was concerned, as far as Marie Antoinette's own mother concerned, it didn't count, because the girl couldn't inherit the kingdom. And Marie Antoinette suffered so much pain and agony, she almost died during the delivery, that she thought, God, never again, I never want another baby. But she knew what her duty was, and she knew she had to have a son. And it was so humiliating also, because she had to give birth in public, because they didn't want any, you know, sneaked babies in from other sources. So she had to prove to 50 noblemen and women that the baby was coming out of her womb.
Having read the trilogy, it's so full of details, and it must have been a real luxury for you to be able to do a trilogy, because usually
it
you
was.
Have to put it in,
it was
in one book.
It was my dream to do a trilogy, because there was so much information there. I thought, I could never cram all of this into one novel, because otherwise it would be like the greatest hits of Marie Antoinette, and other people have done that. And what would make my book special? And no one had done a book for the adult market about the childhood of Marie Antoinette. Who was this girl? Where did she come from? this incredible physical makeover she had to endure. The whole first book, the first half of the first book, is about her childhood in Austria.
And it's beautifully written.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I researched every one of those men who came to assist in her physical makeover, the two French actors who taught her voice lessons, gave her elocution lessons, who had been performing at the Volksoper in Vienna. Those were the real guys. The man who gave her the French orthodontia was a real Monsieur Lavarin. He was the dentist who did it, and I researched what the braces on her teeth would have looked like and how they would have been installed. Jean-Georges Nauvert, the ballet master who taught her the Versailles glide and taught her the dances that were popular at the French court. All of those people are real, and it's interesting because I had an idea about the two actors who had given Marie Antoinette the elocution and diction lessons. And
which, of course, you know a great deal about, having been been a trained actress.
Yes, exactly. Lying on the floor and breathing through your diaphragm. And there's a scene in the book where the Empress comes across this lesson and is appalled that the future Queen of France is lying on the floor, breathing with these actors. Over her, giving her instruction. That it really happened. The French, once they found out, the French ambassador, once he found out that the Empress of Austria had engaged a pair of actors, of all things, and actors were considered, just slightly higher than dogs, to teach the future Queen of France how to properly enunciate her French words, the marriage was almost called off because of this. It was a scandal, and that really happened.
Well, tell me, when you... going into such a detail, which was fantastic in the trilogy, when I'm sure you must have pitched it, you already had quite a background in historical writing. Do you recommend for new writers who haven't such a background that they should just plunge into it and start doing research on a historical novel, or should they try to pitch it first to an agent?
The market has changed so much. Even my agent tells me that the market we sold Marie Antoinette into in 2009 is not the market it is anymore. Even the book that I'm writing now, which is set in the mid-20th century, she said, and I have had 20 books published, all by the major, there used to be six publishing houses in New York, major houses, they call them the Big Six, and then Penguin and Random House merged, so they're the Big Five. All 20 of my books, six works of nonfiction and the balance, 14 novels between contemporary fiction and historical fiction, all published by the major houses. So I'm not exactly new at this game. But she tells me that nowadays, no matter how long you've been doing this, editors want to see a whole book. So that once upon a time, I once sold... a novel on one sentence, on a one-sentence proposal.
Wow.
That was one of my contemporary
books. One of your contemporary pieces.
Yeah, I was already under contract, and they wanted a next book from me. So that, I wasn't starting from scratch. But the landscape has changed so drastically. What I would suggest for writers who are interested in writing something historical is research. Don't try to get a contract before you do your research. Have it in place. If editors are really looking for the whole book now, know your material, because you will be competing against people who already know this stuff like the back of their hand. And readers know this. Readers of historical fiction are devoted and loyal, but they know their history as well. So if a writer gets it wrong, they can be kind of unforgiving.
Well, You know, thank you, Leslie. This has been a wonderful, wonderful interview. I'm sure that all of my readers will, my listeners will enjoy becoming your readers. And I have put on my webpage, patsygill.com, links to your books, to all three of the books. And I hope that all of my listeners will go and click on and read these books. Becoming Marie Antoinette was the first book. Days of Splendor and Days of Sorrow is the second book, which I love that title. And then,
thank you.
And then, of course, Confessions of Marie Antoinette, which is a heartbreaking book. You know how it's going to end, but it's a wonderful book. And
I have to say, I kept hoping it would end differently.
I know.
As I wrote it, I kept hoping it would end differently. So that's my own
sort of wish that secretly they had managed to escape and come to America, but... It didn't
go anywhere.
Anywhere, exactly. Well, thank
even
you.
Belgium.
So much. Even Belgium. Well, thank you, Leslie, so much. Thank you for joining us today. And there's so much to talk to you about. Next time, I'd like to have you on and talk about some of your contemporary fiction because I think it's fantastic. You have a tremendous sense of humor. And when people go to my website, they'll see a photo of you with your beautiful red hair. You look like. You should play Mary Queen of Scots.
So. She was 6 feet tall. I'm only 5'2".
Yeah, well,
there are lots of tutors I could play.
Exactly.
There are lots of short tutors.
Exactly. Well, thank you.
Well, I did when you just talk about write what you know. One of my contemporary novels was called Temporary Insanity, and it's a real Romana Clef about my years as a legal secretary. So if you want funny and you want my real life, That one.
Okay. I haven't read that one. I've read some of the other ones. I'm going to check that one out. So thank you so much.
That one has a lot of names changed to protect the guilty, but that was all about my life as a struggling actress working all the temp jobs I did in the secretarial world, temporary insanity. So that one, that was right. Writing what I knew before I really delved into all the historical stuff.
Great. Well, thank you. I'm going to put that one up on my webpage, too, because that sounds great. I've got to read that. Okay, thanks
that
again.
That's writing well is the best revenge. So that's another thing I can suggest to your readers, even if it never gets published.
Okay.
It feels so good.
It does. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Patsy.
Okay, bye-bye for now.
Thanks for having me.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
My pleasure. Bye.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Charles Ruttenberg Realty proudly sponsors Joy on Paper with Patsy Gill. Charles Ruttenberg sets the standard of excellence with residential and commercial real estate transactions and can help you on your next transaction, whether that is for a second home, investment, or downsizing. Call us today at 727-538-9200 extension 2 and allow me to help you. I'm John Rakowski, the broker at Charles Ruttenberg Realty.
At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy a lifestyle to fit your needs. From independent living, assisted living, memory care, and skilled nursing. Our exciting independent lifestyle is the perfect combination of freedom, comfort, and security. Enjoy total independence with peace of mind. Our independent lifestyle includes chef-prepared meals in our beautiful waterfront dining room, a continental breakfast, all utilities, including cable and telephone, housekeeping with linen service, scheduled transportation, including trips for shopping, local restaurants, theater, and more. Our activities program is second to none. At the Oaks of Clearwater, you'll enjoy affordable luxury waterfront senior living with $1 million view. Call today, 727-445-4069, and discover where caring, compassionate service really makes the difference.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi. I would like to talk to all of you veterans out there, all you guys and gals who have served our country. Because of my work with vets for my forgotten F-105 Warrior project, I know that many of you have trouble sleeping. Next time you have one of those long sleepless nights, instead of reaching for a pill or watching a rerun of a girl's basketball game, get up and start writing. It won't be easy at first, but anyone who can face IEDs can face a blank screen without fear. The words are in you. It's a struggle at first, but after a while you will see progress. And don't write about the war. Maybe you should save that for 20 or 30 years when you're old and gray. Write about something that takes your mind in a new direction, something that takes you out of yourself. A kid's book, for example, for your kids. A cookbook, maybe with your wife. The two of you could write a book. Or a mystery about a detective who was a former NBA star. I don't think anybody's written that. If I knew anything about basketball, I would write that. Or write a book about zombies. Those are big sellers. Or even a book about drill sergeants you have known. You know, better yet, write a fantasy about zombie drill sergeants. It might become a bestseller. You have been sent on lots of missions. Now is the time to send yourself on a mission. You know what it means to carry through, to never give up. And in the end, you will be able to say, mission accomplished. You will know the joy of holding in your hands a book that you have written, a book that you can share with your family, and if it turns out to be good enough, a book that will sell. So take the time, take your pull yourself together and say, I can do this, and give yourself a mission. And all I want to say is something that Jordan Lee sang, and it's a beautiful song.
And for that I have something I need to say.
So if I can help you, let me know. Go to my website, patsygill.com. That's Patsy, P-A-T-Z-I-G-I-L. That's one L. And send me a note. I'd be happy to meet with you and to help set you up with a computer program so that you can start writing your book. Which also reminds me that Beach Babes Book Blast, which is very difficult to say three times in a row, Beach Babes Book Blast is offering a special event-only golden ticket for members of the armed forces and their families. You will be given special VIP treatment. You will be able to get into the event early and receive a free paperback book signed by one of the authors. The proceeds of these tickets will go to the Run for the Fallen in Tampa Bay. It's a wonderful opportunity for you to get inspired and, of course, to see some of the cover models, which will also be fun. So do join us at that event. I have a link on my Facebook page. It's Facebook.com/PatsyGill. That's P-A-T-Z-I-G-I-L, one L. And there's a link so you could get your tickets and find out more about the Beach Babes Book Blast. It will be lots of fun, and I hope to see you there and talk to you about how I can help you get started on writing your book. Now, last week I put a challenge up for people to like me on Facebook, and Vince Leverance is the winner. And if he will email me his address, I will send him a $15 Starbucks card, because all writers need coffee. And I'm sure that he's an aspiring actor and writer, and he can use it. But if you sign up and like me on Facebook, I'm offering this week a Joy on Paper t-shirt. And so I will announce the winner next week. Now, last week, I issued a challenge to all of you to write a one-act play. The West Coast Players have a contest. It's a one-act play. It's about 10 pages, 10, 15 pages that you need to write. And I, again, the information's on my Facebook page. The deadline is April 11th at midnight. And it is an opportunity for you to really test yourself out. Think of a dialogue that you've had in the past, a conversation you've had with several people, with two people. It could be a monologue if you wanted, although they would like some actors in it. So you just have to write the play, put it down on paper, read it out to yourself. Practice it. Say, is this what I want to say? Is this a story I want to tell? It's a fun way to get sort of put your toe into the writing business. There's only the $5 cost, and the winners, there will be, I think, 10 winners, maybe a few more, and their one-act plays will be put on in July by real actors. And there is nothing more exciting than to write something down and then to hear actors actually reading it. It's really an amazing feeling, and I'm sure that there are many of you out there who could do it. So whether you're a policeman, I'm thinking of a certain policeman in the past who has many interesting stories to tell, write a dialogue about it. Get it on down on paper and just start. That's the most fun. Don't know, did anybody call in to win the tickets? Not yet. Nobody knows that. I thought it would be a real easy question. If you haven't read Dorothy Sayers, then perhaps you should start, and then you could know the answer and win two free tickets to the Beach Babes Book Blast. I don't know, that's a real mouthful, but it's lots of fun. And so I hope that maybe you better start reading Dorothy Sayers. And next week, come on and give me a call. And if somebody knows who his mother was, I will be happy to send you the tickets. Now, next week, my guest is going to be Maggie Lynch. Maggie writes under several names, and one of them is Maggie Fair. She wrote The Chameleon, The Awakening, The Forest People. It's what we call young adult fiction. This is a big market, and for many of you, it's a great way to start. Young adult fiction is not as long as a novel, a major novel, and yet it's really can be really a lot of fun to get into, particularly in Maggie's case. She's written a fantasy. Fantasies are a lot of fun, and you can really let yourself go. Maggie's an expert in them, and I'm sure that you will really enjoy listening to her. She will be happy to answer your questions about how to break into the market in this field. Ever since the Harry Potter, there are a lot of young readers, and I'm sure you will enjoy listening to her. Now, one of the things that I wanted to tell you, people ask, well, how can, you know, I become a better writer? You have to read. Now, Hemingway, I think it was Hemingway, said you have to read 500 books before you can be a writer. Well, I don't think that you have to read 500 books before you can become a great writer. But you should read great writing. And you don't have to pay for it. It's all free. All of the best great books are free on Gutenberg. So if you want to read great writing, go to the Gutenberg Project, and you can download any of the masters. Kevin. Okay. Hi. Is Kevin there?
Kevin? Hi, this is Kevin from Indian Rocks Beach.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing well today. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. So do you know the answer to that question?
I did not hear it.
Okay, I have a little contest going for anyone who knows the mother of Lord Peter Whimsey. But what were you calling in for? Something? A question about writing?
Yeah. So I am writing a nonfiction book, and I've been using Microsoft Word, but it's just unwieldy.
No. Don't use Microsoft.
And I don't know. Like when it was a short book, it seemed okay, but now it's been getting longer and longer, and like it doesn't. Like Word doesn't
stop.
Like, break it down.
Yeah.
No.
Stop right away. Do not use Microsoft Word. You're just going to get yourself into a mess. There are quite a few programs. I prefer Scrivener. If you haven't used it, if you haven't heard about it, it's a wonderful program. You will bless the day that you start using it. It costs only $40. It's called Scrivener.
Okay.
It's a program from England, and it's designed for writers. It lets you organize everything. It handles everything for you. And in the end, it even compiles for you.
And it'll export it into like a PDF?
It exports it into PDF, EPUB, any format you want. So it is the program that you should be using. And it's, as I said, it's $40. Everything is organized, easily movable. There are templates for your research. Since it's a nonfiction book, it's wonderful to have a whole area where you can put all your research, all of your links.
That's great.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful program, and I highly recommend it. And as I said, in the end, you can compile it for PDF, EPUB, Kindle, any format that's required. So
that's interesting that you say Kindle, because I think that might be where I try to publish it. It's on the Amazon.
Okay, well look,
Kindle
call next week if you want. I was going to talk about Scrivener next week, so give me a call next week and let's talk about exactly what you're doing, and I will give you some more advice. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Nice talking to you. So I'm running out of time, and it's been a great day. Thank you for joining me today, and please go to my website. It's patsygill.com, and I have all the links to the books that I discussed today. And I will also put a link there for this program that I'm talking about, the Scrivener program. So please go there, and also go to my Facebook page. It's Facebook.com/PatsyGill, and like me, because I like you. And this is Patsy with a Z, wishing you a great week. Remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or spoken on stage or screen. So this week, take some time and write, one page at a time. In a month, you will have your first chapter. Join me next Tuesday at 11 a.m. for Joy on Paper.